This is the Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is episode 261, and we are discussing TV deaths we cheered for. We're also going to have the latest in movie and TV news. We're going to talk about John Wick Chapter 2, a quick bit on Lego Batman, and a listener request for Star Wars Attack of the Clones. Yeah, you heard that right. Be sure to get the hoe in the... You can feel my anticipation. Be sure to get the hoe in the go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on iTunes, where reviews are appreciated, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. Please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, whatever it is. You can also support the podcast at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, where some tiers will get you a bonus episode of the show, which is available now, or you can make us watch something we don't wanna, or you think deserves attention, maybe like, say, Attack of the Clones. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
Can we talk about that experience? I feel kind of... I'm not sure I like that.
Which experience is that?
Having to rewatch Attack of the Clones.
We're going to talk about that. And John Davenport, by the way.
Hey, guys. Is anybody else's heart like beating a mile a minute right now?
No. Why?
A little bit, man. I just watching the news is pretty freaky.
Oh, because Russia dropped the missile?
Well, not only that, but, you know, everybody complains about how awful it is here, but at least we're not freaking North Korea. Holy crap.
Right?
Did you see what happened?
No.
What happened there?
Let's try to avoid politics. Is it going to scare me? Wolverines!
It's not going to scare you for us, but Kim Jong-un, is that his name? Is that the successor?
Yeah, that's him.
He, like, killed his half-brother.
Did he really?
Like, had him assassinated, like, in an airport with, like, two female assassins that, like, put a cloth over his face and... He died.
That's some Game of Thrones shit. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Yeah. Two female assassins? That's awesome.
I know. It's like something straight out of, I don't know, one of Jack Ryan movies or something.
Were they dressed up as cleaners?
I don't know the details, man. I just saw it right before we started recording.
Did they blend into the crowd? Did they do that?
Man. Yes, and then they jumped off of a high place and you heard an eagle scream. That's exactly what happened.
Like doves flying out of nowhere. Oh. Like, who's carrying doves in their pockets?
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? When I assassinate people, I always have doves in my pockets. Just in
That's
case.
Like the worst signature move for an assassin, you know?
I liked when John Woo did it in Hard Target and Jean-Claude Van Damme is in the bayou. There's no doves in the bayou. What the hell? Where the hell are they coming from?
Where all the predators are going to suddenly swoop out of nowhere in the bayou just to eat those doves.
I'm telling you, it's insane. Well, thanks for scaring the piss out of us, Scott. We're going to get this podcast done, hopefully, before we're all dead. By the way, don't forget, we have our 50 Shades Darker Reactions podcast where we reviewed the movie and talked about a lot of kinky sexery on that podcast. Very adult, very mature, very responsible, journalistic type reviews of that film.
You should really nice self-edit there. Okay. All right. Hold on. I just... Okay. I'm all right.
Yeah, like you said, sexery. That was a nice edit.
That was like a nice self-edit. Yeah.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, we've talked about this, I feel like, too much, but it keeps coming up. It's like it won't die. I mean, Ben Affleck is having a midlife crisis. Matt Reeves is confirmed for The Batman. He's going to direct it. He did the most recent ape movies, Planet of the Apes, which is great. I think he's a great director.
Did he do Cloverfield as well?
He did. He also did Let Me In.
Yeah.
And he's a big alum from the Abrams School of doing stuff.
Good.
I'm so glad you said, like, tired of talking about it, because, man, I am, like, already tired of this movie. It's not even in production.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, now the rumor – wait. Now that there's more. Now the rumors are that Ben Affleck wants out. Well, no shit. I mean, who wouldn't at this point? I would be running for the hills if I could get out of that contract.
Does he want out because of this, or does he want out because he's just having a midlife crisis is my question.
If he even wants out. I mean, it is a rumor, speculation, yeah. But apparently it's been a guy in Collider Talk, John Capi, I think it was, quoted three unnamed sources. So I do that often when I'm talking to friends. Oh, yeah, I know three guys who said this is true. I do that all the time. Doesn't make it fact.
It's when you're trying to win an argument.
Yeah, that's what you do. Man, I know a bunch of guys I know said the same thing. I'm right.
That's how it works for some people.
You turn to that guy from Ant-Man. Yeah. Like, my cousin's brother knows this guy. It's over here, and he gets his deal, and then
everybody says so. Everybody, I'm the best. Everybody says so.
Exactly. at this point, I want Lena Headey from Game of Thrones. Just put her in the costume. They get Batwoman. I'm done with this.
That is the hottest thing I've heard you say in a while.
Yeah, that's what I do. Go listen to that 50 Shades Darker. Huh? There's a lot of kinky sexery talk.
You know what, though? One more thing before you move on. I'm actually kind of shocked that I'm going to say this, but I'm a little more excited about the prospect of it going towards the less grounded route that they're talking that it would go with this director. And that's coming from the guy that loved The Dark Knight and that trilogy, just because it made a comic book movie feel real. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to it just being fun and insane, like the original Batman.
I'm fine with
you
that.
You know what I mean?
I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're due.
I think it's going to be – I think if he does it, it will walk that nice tightrope between the two, because if you look at the evidence presented to us by his other movies, he does a really good job of walking the tightrope between the fantastical and grounded, which works with one of the best storylines from the comics that a lot of people talk about, which is the Scott Snyder storylines from the series. I'm really excited to see something like that from him. I'm really just worried about Affleck at this point. If he quits, I think that Batman's done. We should just put him in a closet somewhere where he can just be crazy and broody all by himself and not even consider bringing him out again.
I would honestly be bummed. I think he's done great from the limited opportunities he's had. I think he's done great. I would be really disappointed. But I also get, he's also recreated his whole career, especially as a director and as a writer and everything else. I mean, he's really, he was so golden. And then can you imagine if you're him and you saved your career? I mean, you're just like, yes, I'm out of the ashes. And then Zack Snyder happens in your life and just pisses all over all of it.
It just sucks because he wasn't what was wrong with that movie.
No, he wasn't what was wrong with that movie. But it's not Zack Snyder. It's his own failure or perceived failure with Live by Night, really, that's kind of spawned all this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's hitting him. It's hitting him. And I think Batman made him put that on the back burner. That affected that. So, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think he's okay with what's going on with Batman. I think he kind of trusts it, but he seems like the kind of guy who really just like when one thing goes wrong, he's putting it all up on flames. If it turns out that any of this is true, if any of this is true, everything's going up in flames and he's starting from the ground up again is what he seems like.
Can we get Matt Damon on the phone and we'll just get this answered real quick?
Well, I was just going to ask you, do you think we're going to see a cameo of him in Jay and Silent Bob 2?
No.
Strike back.
If that even happens, Mr. Kevin Smith, I love Kevin Smith, but come on, man, you promised like 8 different movies in the last 5 years. Until they're shooting, I don't believe there is going to be a Jay and Silent Bob 2. I just don't.
What would you rather? Would you rather have that, or would you have him do another Tusk or Hoser Brothers or whatever that? No. What was that? Hoser
Red State. I'd rather see him do another Red State.
Yeah,
another Red State.
Go back to that because that was that was evolved filmmaking. You know, that was doing something better and different and unique. And then he went way the other direction. He smoked too much weed one night, went way back the other way.
Yeah, thanks, Seth Rogen. Go burn in hell.
Go burn in hell while you're smoking a blunt in hell. Yeah.
Right.
Well, moving on to actors who are okay if they leave a franchise. Divergent star Shailene Woodley says she's out of the Divergent. Because apparently they're going to take that final movie and move it to TV, maybe morph it into a series. And she's like, I want no part of that. What do you guys think? I mean, I'm over here going like, bye, Felicia. But what do you guys think?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, everyone kind of wanted to just jump on her for not wanting to finish this. And I get that to some aspect. But I mean, if she's not under contract, she's not like obligated to finish it. I mean, it kind of sucks that the main character from the show isn't going to be in the TV series. And I don't know how that series ends, but I honestly didn't even know there was more than 3 books. I thought that was a trilogy for some reason.
There is 3 books. They split the last one into 2 movies.
Into 2 movies, but they're making the second half, the fourth movie, the TV series instead.
Yeah, we talked about this a while ago. But what happened is that the third movie didn't do as well as they thought it was going to. So they were debating their options. So they decided instead of releasing the fourth movie in theaters, they're going to make it as basically a springboard to a TV series. So it's going to actually air on TV is what they're looking at now. And she's like, I'm not going to do that.
And I'm kind of okay with that. I mean, I don't really think this is a bite the hand that feeds situation, because sure, it's probably the biggest franchise she's been a part of, but it's not where she got her start either. You know what I mean? She had other movies, pretty big movies.
She's had a prolific career, really.
Yeah, she really has.
For such a young person, she's had a prolific career.
I mean, prolific might be
her. I also don't think that it's her thinking that she's too good for TV, which is what it sounds like on the surface, because she is doing an HBO TV series. Granted, that's
different,
that's premiere
though,
TV.
Man. That's different.
Someone says you're going to star in a movie with Reese Witherspoon or TV series Reese Witherspoon and
Nicole Kidman
and the Scarecrow, and you're going to be like, yeah, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. It's a little different than, we need you to do this TV series. It'll probably end up on CW. We don't know.
Right.
Because to her, I think she would see, it appears to me, just my opinion, seems to me that she's looking at that as that would be a downgrade in her current career trajectory.
Yeah, if it were me, I don't know what it's like to work in a movie and how strenuous that is. I would kind of want to see it through to its conclusion, but that's me. But it sounds like she's more interested in propagating all female cast entertainment, so more power to her.
Yeah.
Well, it could be along the lines of who would she be doing this movie for anymore? Because, at this point, it's not like the fans showed up to the theater to go see it. So why would she want to go do this for the fans? They didn't show up at the theater to make it a big hit. Bless her for
knowing.
Because
they showed up for the first one?
Hey, they showed up for the first one. They barely showed up for the second one. They really didn't show up for the third one. Okay, it's time to go. She's going to be fine in whatever she does. She doesn't have to do this. So good for her for having the wherewithal to say, all right, you know what? I'm done with this. I don't need to take the step.
Right.
I'm not on board with that. I get why you're saying it, but I'm kind of – her career, prolific, really is an exaggeration. She had a decent career, but prolific, I mean, she's kind of the low-rent Jennifer Lawrence, isn't she? I mean, I know we're not supposed to say mean things like that, but that's what kind of career is.
Is she going to be that much low-rent being in this TV series?
No, but what I'm saying is – no, hear me out. What I'm saying is – Divergent took her to another level, took her career to a different level. She was not at the point where she was going Fault in Our Stars and everything else that happened because of that movie. I mean, that really catapulted her, launched her career into the stratosphere, made her more recognizable, etc. The movies didn't pan out as well as they should have, and the studio definitely botched how they released them. But I would say from a fan's perspective, and I'm not even a fan of these movies, I would actually probably be offended if she couldn't come back to just do one movie to finish it out. However they want to do it, to lead into a series or whatever, just that one thing for those diehard fans that have helped her career and went out and bought her tickets to everything else she did to support her, I think it's kind of not cool.
Tomato, tomato.
I think she's also looking out for the best for her career, too. If those same people aren't going to support her in the third movie, then what's to say they're going to support her in the TV series or anything beyond that? She's got to do what people actually want to see.
Right. I commit to something. I finish it. I see it through. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, Shalene. If you're listening, that's all I'm saying. See things through. There's fans. They love that stuff. They loved you. All right. Well, now we go on to people that hate me in particular. It looks like David Gordon Green and Danny McBride are going to write and direct the new Halloween, and somehow John Carpenter saying he may even score it. John, why?
I'm going to pause for a couple seconds just to let you get some like groaning and just huffing and puffing out of the way. Do you need it?
I threw things. I mean, like, first you did Rob Zombie to this franchise, and now you're going to put Danny McBride? Oh, my God.
You know, hey, first of all, if one of the biggest horror fans and who has the money to like buy into all this stuff can screw it up, what's the worst that the crew who brought us those two movies, Pineapple Express and Your Highness, what is the worst they're going to be able to do, right?
Just making me sad.
Well, I did some more research beyond some of this stuff, and I looked into what was said by Danny McBride about what they're trying to do. So they're going to basically Superman Returns this. They're taking the movies that happened after the second one and they're retconning the whole thing. So it's going to be in their universe. It's the first movie, the second movie, and then their movie, and everything else after it is done. It's gone. which is kind of cool because it means that they really want to bring it back to its ground roots of being a scary slasher horror flick. And I'm for that. If they want to do it that way, good for them. It sounds to me like their head's in the right spot. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm actually going to play devil's advocate on this one too, because all this stuff that you hate Danny McBride for, Aaron, was never him in the director's chair. It was him acting and him maybe acting or not acting, just being himself.
And writing.
And I get that.
And writing.
And some writing, yes. Mm-hmm. But the only thing he's directed was one episode of Vice Principals, which he also did a lot of that writing too. And that's nothing Halloween. It's not like that at all. I mean, do you really think that he's going to write and direct a Halloween movie with his signature on-screen presence? I mean, come on. That's not going to happen.
Everything he does has his signature on-screen presence. Literally, every single thing he has done, he is the exact same character in everything. So do I think that will be somewhere in this movie? Absolutely. Yes.
I don't think so.
And it's
not going to be like a security guard or something like that.
Yes, exactly. And it's not even a novel concept. They're not even it isn't a brilliant idea. Halloween 4 did the exact same thing. They retconned Halloween 3. Friday 13th, whatever, retcon whatever, because there's so many of those that retcon other movies.
Oh, come on. Give it a chance. He's not even elected yet. I mean, he's not even. See what I did there?
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Maybe it'll be awesome.
Who knows? I mean, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, is it gonna be any worse than Rob Zombie's
no,
Halloween?
No, it won't. Yeah. You're right. That's true. That would be hard. Although I could see it if like the dude from Eastbound and Down shows up and he's fighting Michael Myers, because I could see Danny McBride trying it or pitching it. Guys, I got a great idea. This is the best idea you've ever heard. It's tremendous.
There's no way. There's no way it's gonna happen.
You know, something else I want to point out is, can we just talk about real quick how much of a sensitive soul a badass rocker with all that bravado that Rob Zombie has to be?
What do you mean?
Well, yeah, what do you mean? So you remember there was a couple months ago, or maybe even a year ago, there were some articles circulating that Rob Zombie was talking about how John Carpenter had, you know, did not support him and didn't do anything and was like totally against his idea of doing the movie. And John Carpenter's like, what? He's lying about me. I told him to go do it and make it his own. What the hell?
That's true. Yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
Then these two idiots show up and they're like, hey, bro, let's toke it up and talk about Rob's Halloween. And we got a good movie. We got a movie coming on. I don't know about good, board. But we got a movie coming out.
And people are like, well, hey, John Carpenter's behind it. And my argument is John Carpenter hasn't been making a whole. I love John Carpenter. His films are iconic in my world and my life. But he also hasn't done a lot lately. You know what I mean? So I think after Rob Zombie kind of burned him, he probably does want to take a little bit of ownership back. And I'm hoping. I guess you're right. I should have some faith that maybe they can squeak out something that isn't what I've seen Danny McBride squeak out before. How's that?
I think that's the best answer I could get out of you for it. Yeah. So
that's a ringing endorsement. Let's go for that.
Yeah. Next Halloween. I can't wait. All right. Well, moving on. So Saturday Night Live is having a renaissance this season. It's probably why we've alluded to a couple of tremendous jokes here. Its highest ratings in 6 years. But the reason I am bringing this up is because I have seen many people who feel they're, and this is like a semi-serious conversation. I don't want to offend anybody. And I realize it's semi-political, but so we're going to try and dance around that part of it. But I've seen many people who feel that the material is very much a one-trick pony. It's only making fun of one side of the aisle right now. It's only making fun of Republicans and that side of it, the Trump administration. Well, it took it really easy in those people's opinions on the other side of the aisle for many years. So what do you guys think of that angle, Scott? And since we know you love to dance around controversy,
I'm not going to dance this time, actually. I'm going to be straight up. Right.
Don't hurt me.
I don't watch Saturday Night Live regularly just because I feel like I have better things to do on Saturday nights than watch TV. But I've been watching a few sketches, the ones that pop up on my Facebook. People will post it because this was funny or that was funny. And I actually watched an episode on demand this weekend, and they're not wrong. Most of their stuff is very politically charged, and arguably the best stuff is politically charged. The stuff where they stray away from it just kind of falls flat, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And most of that politically charged material leans towards the left. However, this last episode, to kind of counterpoint that, is they took a stab at the left. Did you guys see the skit with the Cheetos commercials they were trying to make?
No.
Yes. That was actually, well, I mean, that was pretty funny, yeah.
It was a dig on the left, because the skit was they're in the Cheetos like marketing department or whatever, and there's two teams of people that are pitching commercials to these executives, and the one team just keeps pitching everything that has to do with social issues like immigration or I can't remember what the other two issues, but it's just like things that have nothing to do with Cheetos, mm-hmm. which was, let's be honest, quite a few of the commercials that were in the Super Bowl this year. You know, it's just they're basically picking on these companies for using political issues to sell their product. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it was going the other way. And I kind of applauded them for that, especially because Alec Baldwin was in that skit doing it, which felt out of character for him considering his politics. But, mm-hmm. but back to the original topic, I mean, sure, they've always favored one side, but at the end of the day, you go where the material is, guys. And there's simply more material on the other side at the moment. I mean, it's what everybody is talking about. My Facebook wall has been nothing but blasting the right for months. Now, granted, I live in a very democratic state. It's kind of expected. A lot of my friends lean that direction, and I can't speak for people's Facebook walls in other states, but that's all anybody is talking about is politics. Even people that I didn't know were into politics are talking about politics, and that's kind of what Saturday Night Live has shaped their show around for years, is what's in pop culture. And sadly, politics has become pop culture, mm-hmm. Much to the chagrin of our nation, really. And that I think what they're doing makes sense for them.
Though I agree with what he's saying, it is a one trick pony thing. I'm so sick of the whole political thing and even making jokes about political things. I've relegated myself to just posting pictures of puppies on Facebook. So it's just, even if I see people arguing on somebody else's post, I'll just start putting pictures of puppies in those posts just to make it stop. Cause I'm really just over every time I launch Facebook. Oh, look, these two people are still arguing about BS. Okay. Come on, man. And then the whole point you were making about people who are trying to make everything a political statement is making me crazy too. There was it's just nuts. I avoid it. I agree that it's a one trick pony thing, and I'm done. I'm over it. I need to go back to sleep now.
It is one trick pony, man, but I have not laughed so hard at a skit on television in a long time as I did this last week. Oh my God. Just bringing Melissa McCarthy in as Sean Spicer. It might be a better, more brilliant move than bringing Alec Baldwin in as Trump. That was the funniest thing I've seen on TV in a long time.
Well, here's what I will say to be devil's advocate is I agree that it has been a one trick pony, man. I was watching, mm-hmm. but I will say it hasn't been must see TV in a long time, regardless of politics. Mm-hmm. I haven't wanted to watch it live in a long time because it hasn't been that funny. It just hasn't been funny. But then as I'm watching them, all the great sketches are political sketches. And the one you're talking about, Scott, is literally the only one. I think there were three or four other skits that were more Republican, but that one is kind of liberal. But it wasn't really poking fun at any specific Democrat, where all of the other ones are poking fun specifically at people. And honestly, I think mm-hmm. the Kelly Conway one has really become mean. Like, it's not funny anymore. I think it's actually become very mean. And
that skit was awkward anyway.
Yeah, it was awkward, and I don't think it was funny. And I thought it was more just angry than it was witty, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I see that it's maybe 75% one-sided. And just by
But then they go, then they try to do ones that are non-political, and you get Alec Baldwin helping a kid do sit-ups, and he's farting for the entire skit.
Yeah, no,
and
that's, I'm not disagreeing with you. Yeah. What I'm saying is that I agree with what people are saying. It's all, that's all they seem to have. Like, they're not really mm-hmm. the funniest they've been in years. They have right now a more bombastic audience because a lot of their audience is dialed into, you know, this whole administration and some things some people aren't liking. Half the country doesn't like, and half the country does, however you want to look at it.
What happened to bringing back like recurring characters? Wasn't that like a thing in Saturday Night Live?
The only recurring character is the president. Now, they've been doing that for years, to be fair. But I will mm-hmm. say they never really did that with Obama. They didn't really skewer Obama a whole lot. that I can recall. If they did, I didn't see it because maybe it wasn't that funny. I don't know. But they also didn't have such a bombastic personality, which gives them more material. So
right.
There's that too.
I mean, they skewered the presidents they have skewered. They have skewered W. They have Clinton. Skewered Clinton. They had, you know,
Gerald Ford,
Gerald Ford, Bush, Gerald Ford. I mean, they've gone after every single president.
Even
Reagan. They went after Reagan mercilessly, nearly mercilessly. Even had his son on the show a couple times, I think. Right.
Anyhow, it doesn't matter. I was a little kid. I don't remember.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But they've gone after every single president. It's just unfortunately what's going on in this administration. Some of it should, you know, they have a right to bring it out and make jokes of it because it's interesting and it tells a story. So I don't blame them. But if the other side doesn't want this to happen anymore, then they have to stop giving so much material.
Yep.
Well, I think Saturday Night Live also has I don't want to say responsibility. I mean, it's their show. They can do whatever they want, and people watch or they don't watch. And right now it's getting ratings, so why would you stop doing what's working, you know?
Exactly. It's working.
But I do think, and maybe I'm just trying to be too fair about it, in an issue of fairness, try harder to go after the other. I mean, if you're going to go after one side so hard, go after the other side as well. That's what I would say. But the problem is
there's only one side in the presidency every 4 years, every term. And that's
true,
but they're
making bits out of everybody in the administration. I mean, Kelly Conway is just a national advisor, and yes, she's made some serious mistakes. I get that. But every single week to just paint her as a complete psycho or moron is just mean, man. That's not funny to me. That's not funny to me. You know, I get Trump, he's the president. Go after him. Sean Spicer, he's kind of done that to himself. I'm fine with that. But then you've got the little people, which aren't they don't deserve that. And I don't think that's right. And I think that we start laughing at that stuff. That makes us mean. I mean, it's just bullies to a degree. So I don't know. That's how I feel. But let's move on to our topic.
So it's OK to bully the president, but not anybody else?
The president is a different position, man. I mean, he's the guy in charge. I mean, he's top dog. You put yourself in that position, you're going to get ridiculed. It's part of it. I don't think a person who's just a national advisor, senior advisor, whatever the title is, deserves to have a Fatal Attraction sketch where they basically seem like a raving psycho. I don't think that's – I don't think it's right. But that's my opinion. What do I know?
You know, moving on to something more fun and interesting at this point.
Yes, please. Take us out of this, brother.
Did you guys know that there's a thing called Netflix cheating?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Hmm?
Yeah, there's a thing called Netflix cheating.
Is that where you bang your girlfriend while your wife's gone and you're watching like the 100?
You chill with somebody else?
Yeah, Netflix and chill with the wrong person.
You're talking about where you get like extra shows that like aren't programmed on Netflix or something? Is that what you mean?
Nope, Netflix cheating. So basically what Netflix has done is they keep on running this survey, and this year they hit 30,000 couples on this survey. And what they discovered is about 48% of these couples, one of the partners will watch a show ahead of the other. So they're watching the show. They're having a great time. You know, Stevie goes off to go hang out with the boys one night. Well, Mary Jane decides that she's going to say, well, screw him for not hanging out with me. I'm watching it anyways. That's what we're talking about when it comes to Netflix cheating.
You watch this episode without me, you bastard.
you guys have done it, right?
Hell yeah, I've done it, man. I get tired of waiting. Seriously, let's go. I want to finish the series up. Just because you got stuff to do doesn't mean I do. I'm lazy. Let's go.
I ain't got shit to do, damn it.
But Scott,
the worst
Scott
part
like
is going back and having to rewatch the episode and pretend like you haven't seen it and act surprised at all the the deaths and stuff. Oh my God, did you believe it just happened?
I can't believe that happened. That's so spectacular. You weren't even watching it. What was to?
Especially if both partners had done it and they're both acting at the same time.
That's perfect.
I get like that because my wife has a hard time sitting still. So we'll be watching a series and she's like, well, we have to watch it. And then I have plenty of time to watch it, but she's doing stuff. And I'm like, well, I mean, really, I shouldn't have to give up my dreams.
Let me ask you guys, when is the opportune time to go do something jack around in the kitchen? A, before the movie starts, B, during the previews, or C, as soon as the title sequence in the movie comes on and you're introduced to the main characters.
Amen.
Oh, clearly as soon as the title sequence. Clearly. Yeah,
exactly. Because that's when you got to pee. God.
I'm hoping she doesn't come in here and, you know, I can hear you, right?
I am condoning Netflix cheating. Do it. Do it all the time, as often as you can. If they can't make time to be with you, then you be confident. You have a more, be proud of yourself. Go enjoy your time.
My wife and I have it down to a system where we each have our own shows that we watch on our own. And then we have the one or two shows that we watch together, no matter what. So like she goes off and she's getting caught up on Blacklist. I'm watching Shameless. And then we watch This Is Us together when it comes out and Big Bang Theory when it comes out. You know, we DVR it, but we don't watch those ahead of time. You just have a system. Pick the shows that you watch at your own time and have the ones that you just bite the bullet and wait for it.
Yeah, basically, what I end up doing is I watch something all by myself. And if I can't shut up about it, then she'll give it an episode or three. And that's kind of what happened with like Stranger Things. She didn't want to watch Stranger Things, but I wouldn't shut up about it. And she finally sat down and watched it by herself. And then I could finally have someone to talk to about it.
Yeah, but see,
I have to like jump up and down, say, please watch this. If you love me, you do it. And yeah,
my wife wants to watch everything I watch. So I don't have anything I can just watch on my. And that sounds like that's a great problem to have, I guess. A lot of guys are like, man, I wish my wife would watch any of this stuff. Yeah. But I'm telling you, there are times where like I have a good four hours or something to myself. I could barrel through them, and I'm afraid that somebody's going to cut my brake lines if I do. So, son of a bitch.
That seems like an appropriate response, actually.
That's how Let's I be feel. Honest. She's not the first person that I would think of that would do that to you.
No, there's right? like a list. Yeah. I mean, I would have to call in, you know, a detective of some sort to find the person. Yes.
Is this what happens when you neg people?
We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Thanks, Jessica, for making me feel bad. Damn it. All right. Well,
high five, Jessica. High five.
Shut up, high five. Scott. We'll put you back in the cage, bitch. We will do it. Before we get into this, we do need to warn you. We're into our From the Outside In topic, okay? We're going to talk about TV deaths. Now, the topic here is TV deaths we cheered for, not the saddest or most pathetic. But we did cheer when these deaths happened. Now, we will not... Hang on. Let me finish. I got to get this warning out, you know, so people know. We will not be talking about any death that has occurred within the last 12 months. But we will be talking about a lot of TV deaths that happened prior to that 12-month window. If that worries you, skip ahead 30 minutes roughly, because you've been warned. Ready? Here we go. Scott, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, with your comment about it's not the sad ones, I was saying we're talking to you, Craig Schermerhorn.
He didn't like to read the topic. The Facebook group, we had so many replies on this, so we're going to be picking some of our favorites from those. We can't read them all this week, but... That's a great problem to have. Thanks, guys, for all the lovely deaths you enjoyed.
Well, there was really one that got 75% of the vote, right?
Yeah, we're gonna get there. Hang on, hold tight. Now, this was suggested by Tori Melching. I had a little Walking Dead in my head, and she wanted us to talk about that. So, TV deaths are open right now. You no longer have an excuse if you get spoiled. Okay, first up. What does it take for you to actually cheer for the death of a character in one of your favorite TV shows?
I mean, the easy answer is someone that just deserves it, right? I mean,
well, like, what deserves it? Who deserves it in your mind?
Someone that has just been so despicable to other characters to an inhuman level that just doesn't seem like anybody like that in real life could actually act like that. It's really the mark of a great character that you love to hate so much. And then their death kind of makes the other characters that they've made suffer feel vindicated after they're finally offed. That's why I stand up and cheer, because finally this character that I sympathize for and have sympathized for however many episodes finally gets that gratification that they no longer have to suffer. And they get their revenge or they get their reprieve. That's why we cheer for them.
Johnny, what about you? What makes you cheer?
I think my favorite reason for someone to die is if the story called for it and the show had the strength and the balls to actually pull that off. It's so many times in TV series, we think about how these characters that we love so much keep on coming in and out of near-death experiences or any of those things, or they always magically find the rope that's hanging off the ledge someplace and they always manage to catch it, stuff like that, that they don't want to commit to actually killing off a character. But when they finally say, you know what, this character needs to die, the story calls for it, and they pull that trigger, so to speak, I'm down. I love it. It doesn't matter if I absolutely love the character. I'm okay with it, so long as they have that strength to behind them to do it.
I am the opposite, I think, of many people, which big shock. I cheer for two reasons. This is what I found. When a character I can't stand, obviously, like a Laurie in The Walking Dead is a prime example, those are easy cheers. They kill him, I'm like, yay! But also when it reminds us all that a character is not a good guy. When you have bad guys that are charming as hell, like a Red Reddington in The Blacklist or Boyd Crowder, they need to kill people we love in order to remind everybody that they're not worth rooting for. And when a TV does that, kind of, I guess in a way to what John was talking about, when a TV does that, it gets very, very bold in my opinion. And I always cheer because that's what you need to do, because too often the villain never kills off your favorite characters because, you know, then that's your favorite character. They don't want to do that. And they don't want you, the audience, to lose your respectability for the villain. They want you to like the villain to a degree. But when a TV show, man, goes bold and does that, I love that. And I will freaking stand up and applaud. One in particular, I literally stood up and applauded. So I will, and I'll talk about that here soon. So we're each going to run through the characters we cheered for the most. But we had so many mentions for one character in particular. He gets his own special mention, his own crown, if you will, his own chair. See the table? Joffrey Baratheon from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. People hate that little bitch. Hate him.
Yeah. They really do, and rightfully so. The kid, I mean, Aaron, we watched that show live together, mm-hmm. and we were the group of, what, like 8 or 9 people or something like that? And how loud did we all cheer, like actually cheer? And yes, this is happening, and this I don't remember having that reaction to a TV show like I did with that one. It was great.
It was insane. I mean, yeah. We were all cheering. We were all like, yeah, Joffrey's dead! You know, and everybody's yelling at him like he can hear. I felt bad for the actor because, I mean, everywhere he went, people hated him.
Yep.
You know, that
he's a real sweet kid in real life, apparently.
Yeah. That season, from that point on in that season, they could have had just Peter Dinklage farting on a snare drum and they would have been just as good of a season.
Yep. That's exactly correct. Do you think he got the death he deserved?
You know, it seemed like a painful painful death. So yeah, I would say to not be able to breathe like that, to be choked off. I mean, think about that. You're still very aware, but all of a sudden you can't do something you take for granted, and then you're just, all you want is that gasping breath of air. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was a good way to go.
Not only that, but you got the twofer because he died in his mother's arms, so you hated almost as much as you hated him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which was awesome. It was great.
We're going to move on. So we're going to do our favorites, I've got three. I don't know how many you guys have, but what characters got – how many do you have? You were going to say something, Jeff?
I got three.
Okay.
I have three as well. I imagine there's going to be some overlap, though.
Probably. But what characters – we'll start with John. John's got me. We'll go round robin. What characters got you pumped up for their demise and why? And John, you start.
All right. My first pick is Laurel Lance from Arrow.
God, yes.
She had to go. And the thing that's really kind of sad about it. So I'm going to actually, you know what? Let me pass on what's sad on it until I'm done. But the character of Laurel Lance, since the beginning of that show, was just such a sap. In time, you know, the story would come to a screeching halt whenever she came on screen. Mm-hmm. She was just always so down and dour. And then when she put on the Black Canary outfit, spoilers, sorry for anyone who hasn't caught up, too bad. But I didn't buy her as Black Canary. I never bought her as Black Canary. She didn't move well. She didn't everything, even like her stunt double didn't know how to move as that character. It was tough because the first Black Canary on the show, which was Sarah Lance, her sister, played by Katie Lotz, was so much better in every respect. She had the look down, she had the movement, because Katie Lotz is actually a gymnast and a fighter in real life. But she was just a stronger character in general. But the thing that was most infuriating about Katie Cassidy is that she just recently showed up on an episode of Arrow again, and she was playing her doppelganger, her evil doppelganger character, mm-hmm. of Black Siren, and she's so much more believable as an evil character. Like you almost like her in the role and in that different role. So to hate her in one role because she's just as whiny little simp of a character, to love her when she's bad, it infuriates me, because it tells me that she has the ability of being good at her job, mm-hmm. but she just couldn't pull it off.
That's a makes good sense. One, yeah, no, it's a good one, man. It really, I was very excited when that happened. I mean, really excited. I'm like, yay! And I think what she whisper into Arrow's ear at the end, I'm like, shut up, just die.
Right.
I mean, I felt bad. It's not the actress. I really felt it was the writing, because I've actually seen her in other stuff and she was fine. It's just bad writing, I thought.
I've got one that you already mentioned a little while ago, and that's Laurie from The Walking Dead. That character annoyed me from like the very first episode, and as brutal as her death was, I didn't really feel sorry for her. I felt a little more sorry for Carl, even though I dislike him almost as much as I dislike her. So I kind of was just out of that moment and just didn't really care. I was like, finally we're done with Lori. Thank God. I'm so glad to be done with her.
There were so many people that were saying, well, I can't believe poor Carl had to do it. I'm like, if I was that kid, I would have wanted to do it. My mom whines so much. Oh, God, just shoot her in the head. Sometimes
was she turning? No.
No, what was she doing? She was laying in the cornfield. I just didn't like her. She annoyed the piss out of me. It's the Walking Dead. What are you gonna do, put me in jail, huh?
Look at the flowers.
My number three, I stood up and applauded. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is the one where I actually literally stood up and applauded it. At that point, in all honesty, most characters in TV shows that were main characters did not die. And they never died by the hands of a main character. And Jenny Calendar was killed by Angel in season 2. And let me explain that. I was kind of annoyed with her character, yes, but I cheered because it was absolutely shocking and necessary. Angel was this, for people that haven't seen it, shame on you. Angel was this brooding vampire, and basically, once he had sex, I know it sounds stupid, but it worked in the context of the show. Once he had sex, a curse took his soul and he goes bad. But up to that point, he was just like acting bad. I mean, he was just doing bad things, saying, you know, witty, evil comments. I mean, he wasn't really doing anything evil. And then he came across Jenny Calendar, who was trying to save him. So she was actually trying to heal him. And he ends up killing her. And it was like just this bold, horrible, shocking thing. And not only did it take a beloved character, because she was starting to become pretty popular on the show because she was hooked up with Giles, da 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 da, but also made one of our favorite characters on the show horrible and despicable. And that was bold for TV, in my opinion. I had never seen it done on TV at that point, and it was amazing to watch, even on some small little WB show. I thought it was a really bold stroke, and really, I stood up and applauded. Made him an absolute villain. Loved it.
Nice. That's a good choice. Does anyone remember Paolo and Nikki from Lost?
God, yes. Yeah. Oh, they were so awful.
Were they the young couple that were like in love? Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, they're, you know, one was a TV star who sidelined as a jewel thief, and the other one was like her boyfriend that helped her out and that sort of thing. They showed up out of nowhere in, I think, a season 3, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was season three.
I'm sure Steve Peterson has it like on his Rolodex or something, but yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so they show up out of nowhere, and like they're the two characters themselves. Like, you spend more time going, "Who are you? Why are you here? Why are you brand new? We don't get it. Why do you have a backstory? Who can we talk more about? Jack and Kate and Sawyer, please." Mm-hmm. And then you get the because they would show up for a couple episodes, and then they die in the most fantastic way, which is basically get themselves buried alive.
which was the nod to the fans, right? Because the fans detested those characters, and that's how Absolutely. They chose to get rid of them, which was great. Wasn't one of them Rodrigo Santoro?
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good pick. Scotty, what's your number two?
I got a little unorthodox pick, but that I cheer for, not for the same reasons I mentioned when we talked about at the beginning, but Kenny from South Park.
That's fair.
I've never watched a show and just enjoyed seeing somebody get just obliterated in so many interesting ways as in that show. And I don't even watch that show religiously, but it just shows up and you hear the infamous line. It's awesome. I don't know why.
That's good. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand Jane on Breaking Bad, and I like Kristen Ritter. I mean, I love Jessica Jones. I like Kristen Ritter. It was the character of Jane. She just drove me insane. Everything about her just annoyed the piss out of me.
Me too.
So when Walter White walks in while just as she's ODing, and he stands there and he's doing absolutely nothing, and you can see his mind, like he goes through an emotional moment of sympathy, of empathy, whatever, and he's debating should he help her. And then he makes that conscious choice to just let her die. I was in both shock and complete bliss because I wanted him to let her die.
Well, she didn't even die from the OD itself. She died because he rolled her over and then she puked and choked on her own vomit.
No, he didn't touch her. He didn't touch her. Yeah, he never touched her. She rolled over. She was on her side and she was choking on her own vomit.
He rolled her over on her back.
He did not. Mm-mm. No, he never touched her. He just looked at her and watched and made a choice. And it was the right choice. That's what it was.
Well, I mean, the point was, is that she probably would have made it, you know, she was having OD symptoms and all that. But I mean, the vomit is what killed her.
Yeah. If he would have moved her, she would have lived. It was his choice, right. Which was why I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. I'm still applauding, Walter. Good job. American hero. That's what you are. All right, last round, I guess. Johnny?
All right, here's a name that you guys may or may not remember. Dr. Robert Rocket Romano.
No?
No.
From ER.
Oh, is that the helicopter?
Yeah, so the guy who the helicopter came back for revenge, that guy.
Wait, what happened? I stopped watching. Once Clooney left, I was done.
Well, I stuck with the show half-heartedly, but Rocket Romano was one of my favorite characters. He was just this brash a-hole of a character, and he was just a straight-up dick all the time. All the time. He pointed out how an Indian girl who was a doctor had the dot on her head, and he used it as made some roadmap reference to "you are here" kind of thing to that dot in her head. I mean, he's really just a detestable character. And in season 9, there was some big thing that happens like it always does, and he ends up having his arm lopped off by the rotor of a helicopter on the roof of the hospital. And then partway through season 10, that helicopter came back with revenge and fell on him.
That's fantastic. And I didn't know that. No,
it's actually amazing because he looks up. He's like had a bad day at the hospital and he's just trying to get away from what's going on. And he's walking out of the parking lot and this explosion happens. He looks up and the helicopter's coming at him. And the camera is underneath him and he falls to his hands and knees. And he's like, not again. And the helicopter just crushes him right there.
Sorry, that was the worst laugh ever. That's fantastic.
If you get a chance, you should just watch that scene because it really is just amazing. And again, I liked the character a lot. But I applaud ER for having the strength to just kill him like that.
Yeah, that's pretty bold. Nice pick, man. I've got to watch it now, and I don't even care, but I want to see that scene. Scotty?
My last one is Tara from Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, yeah. Die.
Man, her character got so annoying because in the beginning of the season, you kind of felt for her a little bit because, she loved Jax, and then she wanted what was best for her kids and everything, but at some point, Just walk away. Just do it. what are you sticking around for anymore? And to your guys' point earlier, she had to die. She had to go for that story to move on because she was, and it gave Jack's motivation from that point on as well. It just moved the story forward. And it was like, thank God she's gone. I was so glad to see her go.
I never liked her on the show at all. I never liked her.
And the way she went out, holy cow. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gemma killed her.
Yeah, with like a butcher fork.
Yeah, with a fork. That's how you do it. You stick a fork in them. They're done.
Damn it.
Loved it. Brutal. One of the most brutal things I've seen on like a not HBO TV show. FX got away with a lot in that show.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal, man. That was pretty brutal. Mm. It was also the biggest show they had on their network. So they had to, what do you want to do, Kurt Sutter? And then they made him do the Bastard Executioner and ruined all his street cred. Mm. My last one, my biggest one is Nina Myers in 24. Myers in 24. This woman killed Jack's wife, sold secrets to every single terrorist in the world, and jacked with Jack on a regular basis. When he shoots,
Nobody jacks with Jack.
And then basically what happens is he shoots her in the shoulder because he was trying to spare his daughter from becoming a murderer because she was going to kill her because she murdered her mother. And so Jack, you know, very, as a loving, doting father, shoots her in the shoulder and he's like, all right, go on, honey. Get out of here. Get out of here, Kim. We're all good. And then coldly and blatantly just murders her himself. It's the only time I think that Jack, or at least up to that point, it was the only time Jack Bauer blatantly murdered someone. It was always self-defense up to that point. That was straight up murder. And it's one of the coolest, most satisfying moments in the entire series. I absolutely needed a cigarette after that scene. It's just chilling. It was chilling to watch because Kiefer Sutherland played it perfect and she died like she deserved, like a dog. Loved it.
Mm, that's a good pick. I was thinking about bringing her up. That is a damn strong pick.
Hoo-ah. All right. Now, how about listener comments? We're going to each pick, because there are so many comments, we're each going to pick our favorite three. Actually, Scott, you stole mine. Mike Victor picked Tara, and I was going to use that, but apparently I won't be using that now.
Oh, so, sorry.
No, it's all right. Thanks, jackass. no, just kidding. Now, why don't we'll do the same order. Go ahead. John, you could just do all three. It's fine.
All right. First up, we have John Sanford. Charlie pays from a loss. Unlike other characters in this thread, I didn't hate him or find him annoying. In fact, I loved the character in the end. I thought his death was a culmination of a wonderful character arc. And after some truly pointless deaths in the show, I cheered for one that had some meaning. And I really can't disagree with that one. That's a good choice. Mm. Up next, Robert Blackstock. Forgot about LaGuardia on Dexter. She died in the first book, but somehow they kept her way too long. I can't agree even more, too. I mean, I loved the books. The book series was great. And I loved the fact that they killed her off as quickly in the books, because I can see that character was played just like she was written in the books throughout the whole series. And she had to go.
Mm, yeah. You know what? I kind of liked her. I didn't dislike her, but I get what people are saying. I like Dokes a lot. I really like Dokes.
Was great. I was sad when Dokes left.
Dokes died. I'm like, man, that's bullshit.
His character in the book is actually even more interesting. So, all right, Marshall Maddox, which he was one of the ones, he brought up Joffrey first, but he also mentions V on Orange is the New Black was a huge one for me, but not so much because in the typical sense, more so I felt that her character hindered the show and actually made it less enjoyable. It was more of a sense of release than celebration. I strongly agree with this too. The V was one of those characters when she came on the screen, she brought everything to a screeching halt. Like her storyline had to be told more prominently than anybody else. And
it became her story instead of the whole prisons.
Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, I was glad that she died, and I loved the way they killed her off.
Just on the side of the road.
Yeah. And it was the lady with cancer that ran her over. Awesome.
Yep.
We're some sadistic bitches is what we are.
Yeah, well.
All right, Scotty, what are your picks?
I went with Kyle Boggs. He said Jax Teller, absolutely best way to end Sons of Anarchy. And I picked this one because I kind of don't agree. Because Jax killing himself by taking his motorcycle into a Mack truck or whatever semi that was annoyed the piss out of me.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
His kid's mother is dead, and his only way to like give them a better life is to kill himself and leave his kids to be raised by, I assume, Gemma, or it was Gemma die.
Oh, he killed Gemma.
He killed Gemma.
Yeah.
So who's going to take care of his kids now? That tells me that Jax, his motivation, the most important thing in his life was Sam Crow.
Yeah.
Instead of his kids.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. That was his mission.
That bugged me. And they try to make it this beautiful moment where he closes his eyes and extends his arms out and he's doing what he has to do for Sam Crow. And like, screw you, man. You got two boys. Run away and take care of your kids. Start over. Like,
we ain't got time for no deadbeat dads in the motorcycle club.
Take off those white tennis shoes and put on some real boots and make something happen.
Yeah, how about we get a job, Jax? How about that? We get a real job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go fix motorcycles. Do something.
What else you got?
Jim Stein said Viserys Targaryen got what he deserved. And I forgot about that one until he posted this one. That death was awesome anyway. Oh man, it was so cool. Crown fit for a king.
Oh, was that the one where Jason Momoa and the gold?
Yeah,
the melted gold.
Yeah, yep. Melts okay. The gold and then just pours it right on his head, and then you hear this like clank as he hits the ground. Oh, it was so good. And that character was just, you hated him from that. Like, he was one of the first scenes you saw Daenerys is, you know, he's basically like fondling her and checking out her breasts and everything right in front of her and talking about how he's going to let all these people's cattle do her. And like, that dude needs to die. He was just so whiny. Like, how does anybody think he's going to be a good leader? And to go out like that was just awesome. Just super satisfying. So good pick there, Jim. And the last one I got is Steve Peterson, who said Anna Lucia from Lost. And he puts a little comment that says, sorry, Amanda. Amanda's a big fan of Michelle Rodriguez. So
that's funny.
But I'm actually with Steve on this one. I could not. I like Michelle Rodriguez. Her character annoyed me in Lost. She just that condescending. Drives me crazy. I was happy to see her go.
Yep. Bye bye. Couldn't leave soon enough. Couldn't leave soon enough.
Bye, Lucia.
Bye, Felicia. Felicia. All right. My listener comments I'm picking. I'm going to go with Tori Melchi because it was her topic, but she said Zoe Barnes from House of Cards and Rita Morgan from Dexter. Yeah, I hated Zoe Barnes, but she died fantastically.
Oh, that was one of the most shocking ones I've ever seen on TV. Just not, and I don't know why I didn't see it coming. I really didn't.
He's just like, bye, bitch, and pushes her in front of a train. It's awful.
That is one of the rare moments where I've literally gasped while watching a TV show.
Yep.
I just went, did that just happen?
And because it was so quick. The first episode of the season, and you don't expect it. You figure she's going to be around for the haul, you know?
Yep. It was beautiful. Oh.
Rita Morgan, I'm going to have to strongly disagree on that one, Tori, from Dexter. I thought that was a heartbreaking death, honestly.
That really was a heartbreaking death. Yeah. She is a fantastic character for that show. She was a nice balance to what Dexter is.
She was just very broken and... You know, she thought she was with a good guy and she ended up being with a serial killer and that got her killed, even if it wasn't by his hand. And it was a horrible death. I'm not with you on that one. I'm sorry. I really liked Rita. Ty Nelson says, you son of a bitch, says Joffrey, Gus Fring, and the 2016 Green Bay Packers championship dreams. I'm with you, Gus Fring. Everything else, you can pee on yourself. All right.
Didn't that happen to the Bears in 85 too?
Oh, jeez. Hey, look, I got to go. Whatever's about to happen, just don't. I don't want to be a part of it.
You mean 2002? Because the Bears won in 85.
Right. I'm saying at the end of. Yeah, you got what I'm saying. Oh, thanks for ruining the joke.
Maybe the joke wasn't working. I'm just saying. Scott Calgaro, this is my other one I'm going to throw in there. Is it a sad commentary in the posters of this thread that I initially thought they were feeling the need to specify characters over 1 year of age? Like, we need to be reminded not to cheer for dead babies. Yeah, because if they ever kill Judith on Walking Dead or Agnes on The Blacklist, I will be cheering. Like, literally cheering.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Use Judith as a frag grenade. Make it happen.
Frag out!
So it was such a great moment. Oh, gets me excited just thinking about it. All right, let's go on to What's This Movie, Scotty.
All right, well, before we get to that, I want to take a second to extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. If you contribute at a certain tier, there is a bonus episode of The Hollywood Outsider waiting for you right now. So be sure to check that out. And with What's This Movie, each week we pick a movie suggested by either a host or a listener. That person has the option to either play a clip, offer you a what am I, a riddle, limerick, haiku, or they could even reenact a famous quote from their movie. If you think you know what the movie is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or through the contact tab in the app, and we'll give you a proper host shout-out on the next episode. Last week's clip was Angela's pick, and that movie was Sense and Sensibility. Those that guessed it correctly were Heather J., who loved that she picked a Hugh Grant movie after professing her love for Hugh, Joseph Clark, and Manuel Perez. So congratulations to those. This week, it is Aaron's chance to confuse us all. So what do you got for us, man?
All right, it's a limerick slash poem slash something. All right, you guys ready?
Strapped in.
Okay. My daughter has been taken, I don't know by who. I've worked with the law, but they seem like fools. I'll take things into my own hands, like a man with a chisel. But by the conclusion, I just pray they hear the whistle. There you go.
Read it again, but with whom this time instead of who?
Nope. Who rhymes with fools? I had the same debate in my head, Scott. I really did. But I'll do it just for you. I'll do it for you. I seriously rewrote the who and the whom like five times. My daughter has been taken. I don't know by whom. I've worked with the law, but they seem like fools. See, it doesn't work. I'll take things into my own hands like a man with a chisel. But by the conclusion, I just pray they hear the whistle. There you go. All right.
Don't limericks have five lines in them?
You know what? I said a limerick or a poem or something. It's something.
Oh, boy.
Sorry, school teacher.
You know what? You teach fourth graders. All right. We're going to go on to some spoiler-free reviews. They are... John Wick Chapter 2 is the first one. Now, we're going to do a spoiler-free review, but we're also going to go into spoilers of the movie after the normal show. So at the very end, we're going to talk a little bit about how the movie ends, but we're not going to do that during the actual review. So John Wick Chapter 2, John and I saw this, picks up days after John Wick ended. Keanu Reeves returns as the master assassin, and he's looking for his car. Once he finally attempts to return to his life of retirement, an old friend shows up to claim a debt that's owed to him. This means John Wick will have to assassinate this man's sister, or a friend of John Wick's, or he's forever burned in his underground assassin club thing we got going on. Things go wrong, double crosses turn into triple crosses, and before you know it, John Wick is killing everybody on the planet Earth. John Davenport, we have touted the original film exponentially, I would say. So what did you think about Keanu Reeves' return to Wick?
I think this was an expertly executed return to a story without trying to beat out the first story. You know, if you think you're going to walk into this movie and watch something that you've already seen before, you really are. I mean, that's the beauty of it. And it actually works better for me this time around because they kind of gave me this sense of security. Okay, I'm just going to see some really cool action stuff. They aren't going to try to do something ridiculous like jump a car between two buildings or something stupid like that. They're just going to keep it clean and keep us in that same kind of world. So I really love that. A lot of times when you watch these movies, they are the writers, directors, or whoever are trying to outdo themselves, and they don't trust us as an audience to be able to appreciate the fact that they give you they're giving you more or less the same kind of idea. The story itself is, I thought, was strong. And God, like Ricardo as Santino D'Antonio was so slimy. He was so good. He just needed a mustache, don't you think?
Like twirling. Yeah, he could have been twirling. There were moments where I was like, man, he's like teetering on over the top. But then by the end, I'm like, nope, he went for exactly what he was going for. Yeah.
It worked. I mean, my favorite addition to the story was Common, really. I thought that his role kind of made me feel like he's someone who's on par with John Wick. They actually had a nice chemistry between the two of them. It even when they're at odds, they had a nice chemistry that seemed to work. I almost really wanted to see some sort of like partnership happen from them. I really love this movie. It was a really good time for me, for sure.
Here's one thing I want to say. It's really bugging me. And I wrote a review, and I definitely talk about it in the review. But you know, I've talked to so many people, and for years, people, Keanu Reeves can't act. Keanu Reeves can't act. All he does, and everybody makes fun of that. Man, I will tell you, I think he is one of the most underappreciated actors working today. What you're getting upset about mostly is his speaking style. Like that is how he speaks. If you hear interviews with him, he speaks that way. That isn't an acting choice. That's how he talks. You know, I mean, a guy from the Valley, I guess. I don't know. But in terms of just pure action choreography and physical presence, the man is better than Jason Statham. He is better than any other guy working in action today. And I, the reason I say that is I have never seen an actor that fluid in an action scene. I mean, he moves like it's a ballet, and it's amazing to watch. Whether it's, you know, he's doing a gun ballet, when he's reloading, it's fantastic. Everything he does physically is just brilliant. But he gets zero credit, it feels like, in the world for, in the entertainment appreciation world.
It takes a lot of effort to sell that. It takes a lot of practice to make that happen. To make yourself look so at home in that sort of thing, you can't just show up and do it. You have to practice that. You have to dedicate it to that. And it's obvious in this movie, for sure. Obvious. Yeah. It's really killer. I even liked how they were able to. So yeah, he is very fluid, but there are a couple of scenes when he's kind of running and he's limping, and they carried it through from scene to scene. They didn't suddenly forget that he's supposed to be limping.
Right.
It's just something that jumped out at me as far as how much care and effort they put into the physicality of this.
Yes, and not to mention like his performance, because like his performance carries the entire movie. If Keanu Reeves doesn't work, this movie doesn't work, and he worked wonderfully. He fights for the entire last hour of the movie. It is nothing but gun ballet, fighting, fisticuffs, every kind of attack you can think of. I mean, it is fantastic what happens in action-wise, and I can see all of it because this Chad Strahovski, I hope I said his name right, the director, knows how to hold a camera still. That's so cool. It's so innovative that he holds a camera still and actually lets the action play out. It's not just 14 cuts of what was it, like the John Wick trailer that showed the Taken 3 where it took like 14 shots for Liam Neeson to hop a fence. I mean,
right.
It's not like that. I mean, there's like one shot and it's Keanu Reeves kicking everybody's ass. But he's getting abused. He's getting the snot beat out of him. I mean, you don't know how he's not just collapsing, especially 50 plus years old. My God, he moves smoother than most 20-year-olds I know. It's just the choreography, the shooting, everything about it was just golden, as far as I'm concerned. I have a hard time finding anything to complain about except for one.
But don't say it. You know what happened to me, and we can't have you'll be bleeping stuff out if you say it.
Ruby Rose.
God damn it!
Ruby Rose. Can we stop trying to make Ruby Rose happen? Like, please. She has been in literally the last three action movies I have seen. She was in Resident Evil, she was in Triple X, and she was in John Wick. Not one of those does she deserve to be the person going up against the main hero. Not one.
That's three more things that I've seen her in, and because I've seen her in Orange is the New Black, and I'm already sick of her.
They're just, yep, me too.
Are you? I don't know how she is on Orange is the New Black. Is she okay on that show? I don't know.
No, she's just an Australian moron. She's, you know, people made a big thing about her. Ooh, Ruby Rose, give you on there. It's Justin Bieber with boobs. I don't need her anywhere near anything. I mean, I'm trying to really control myself at this point because I really have words just to say about how annoyed I am that she's showing up everywhere.
And it's a bummer because she looks badass. Like when you first see her, like, all right, she looks pretty cool. And then it just doesn't follow through for me.
I mean, here's the thing. It works in Triple X because she's basically a sniper. So all she does is you have her face next to a rifle. Yeah, she's got a really sexy smile. I'll give her that. But in John Wick, she's literally going up against Keanu Reeves, who has, I just want to point out, beaten everybody's ass throughout the entire thing. Do you really think that is your formidable threat? I mean,
to be fair, the last guy he fought in the first movie was a senior citizen, and he struggled there.
That was after he got shot and he'd been hit by a car and a lot of other stuff.
Doesn't matter.
She's like 5'2". He's not kidding. John's not kidding. She looks like Justin Bieber. I'm watching Johnny Utah fight Justin Bieber, and I don't like it. I just don't like it.
Oh. Ruby, give me two.
Exactly.
Thankfully, she didn't have a word to say in this. So we had that. She has that going for
her. Yeah, she plays a mute. She does a lot of sign language. So there's that. All right. So we're going to talk more about spoileries after we. Spoileries. Is that a word?
I just make a word. Sure enough. It is now.
Excellent. So what's your final verdict, John? If $10 is the full price of admission,
$12 inflation's a bit.
Well, I mean, everything's more expensive in this side of town.
This is the best rating system, the best. Everybody says so. All right, if $10 is the full price of admission, for me, this is a solid 8 for sure.
Okay.
I gotta stop saying for sure.
No, no, you don't. If $10 full price permission, I give it $8 as well. So, loved it. I don't. People keep asking me if it's better than the first one. I honestly can't decide, but I will say if it's not better, it's neck and neck. Because it does have, there is like the setup, like 30 minutes of setup, which does, there is a little bit of drag there. But I thought there was in the first movie too. So, you know, it just doesn't have that instant dog thing.
Yeah, I'm going to go with it. This is what this one is actually better.
Okay.
It has more compelling reasons behind it. Yes, the dog thing is a very compelling reason for the whole story, but this one kind of has a lot. And this one gives you a lot more of a peek into the world that he lives in too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's got that going for it.
The ending's great too, but we're going to talk about that after the credits, after the normal show. So Scotty, we were asked by Quinn, I believe, to review Attack of the Clones. One of our Patreon subscribers. So please get us going there.
Yes. Well, we for sure saw Attack of the Clones this week to review it. Yeah. Did that for you, man.
Thanks.
And so I'll give a quick synopsis just because I feel like everyone listening has already seen this. So this will be brief. But Attack of the Clones takes place 10 years after episode one. Anakin and Padme, now Anakin's all grown up and they've developed a forbidden relationship while Obi-Wan investigates an assassination attempt on Padme. And ultimately uncovers a secret clone army that has been put together for the Jedi. And that's the basic premise. And it doesn't sound super Star Wars-y, but there's plenty of lightsaber action in this one. And, man, guys, I rewatched this a couple years ago, back when episode 7 was coming out. I rewatched all 6 films to get prepped and ready for that one. And I don't hate the prequels as much as everybody else. But man, this movie has not aged well. It just, some of the CG just looks really rough, really rough.
CG Boba Fett or Django Fett. Oh yeah, for the win. No, that's not a win.
Quinn, was this a punishment? Is that what it was? Like, did we do something wrong to you in former life? Is that what it was?
It's not that bad because I still willingly watch it.
Here's biggest problem is Hayden Christensen. Anytime Anakin is doing anything that's speaking, it's god awful. Hayden, yep. He's fine as a physical presence. Like when they have that whole Blade Runner thing or Space Cop, whatever it is, chase at the beginning. I like that. I thought that was pretty entertaining. But then you put him up against Natalie Portman, Ewan McGregor, Sam Jackson. He's awful.
Here's my thing on that, because there's a couple of scenes where I buy Hayden Christensen, but then there's the scenes when he is being whiny or being just a sap or an idiot or just being whoever he is. There's a couple of scenes when he starts doing that where I wonder if George just didn't have the time or the wherewithal to say, hey, can you just stop doing that? Because Ewan McGregor, he was great. I thought he was a pretty strong presence. Christopher Lee had a very strong presence to him. Sam Jackson did his quieter Sam Jackson thing with much less, I almost said the word.
Sam Jacksonist. There you go.
Everyone who is a veteran did their job very well. But Natalie Portman even had a few scenes where I stopped and looked at her going, really? That was the choice he made?
Yeah, when she says a line where she professes her love to him, she's like, I truly, deeply love you. I was like, oh my God, that was awful. That was really bad. I didn't buy it at all.
Right.
But the line was bad. I mean, just like going from zero to kill a bunch of, or kill everybody at his parents' ranch or whatever. Like, everything is just not well done. Just not well done.
Well, I mean, and to your point, a lot of it was writing. I mean, when they got Anakin talking about sand.
Yeah.
What? It's rough and it gets everywhere. And he's like trying to woo her and like touching her skin is like an excuse for him to be able to touch her hand. It was awkward.
Oh, and he's got that annoying little hippie ponytail. And then there's like this weird 50 Shades of Jedi thing going on with Obi-Wan throughout the movie where he's just like, oh, I'm sorry, master. Oh, I'll do that better next time. You know, just like all that kind of, it just weirded me out. I just didn't find it enjoyable. Just didn't find it enjoyable.
I think you just had too much 50 Shades of Grey in your mind.
I think so too. Yeah,
because I didn't have that problem.
Okay,
with all the crap that we're talking about, there are some awesome moments in this movie, though.
The last 45 minutes are fantastic.
Yeah, the Yoda fight was when I saw that in the theater, I was clapping. I was so excited to see Yoda fling a lightsaber around and jump around. It looked great. It looked awesome. Mm-hmm. That was a very, very cool moment. And then for him to like holster his lightsaber and then just kind of pick up his walking stick and then go back to walking all crippled. That was a really awesome moment. I loved it.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. Or the just Jango dying because he's pointless.
You're really bitter about this Jango thing, aren't you?
I can't stand like Jango and Boba Fett. They're the two worst characters in the whole series. I don't understand why anyone jumps up and down for those two morons. Freaking stormtroopers can't hit the side the broadside of a freaking barn, and yet everyone's like, "Oh my god, they're built off of Jango. That means something." You know.
Well, Boba Fett was a cool character in Empire and Jedi because he was mysterious, and now we've got this backstory that just. It's a cool idea. They just focused on Jango too much.
Yeah, they neutered him. They neutered him for sure.
Mm-hmm. Here's why I keep saying this movie is the worst of all the Star Wars movies. And it's still not awful, but it's the worst of the Star Wars movies. You know, that's good company to be in. But the reason is very, very simple. It's at least four movies hinge on this romance between Anakin and Padme working. And this movie is the one that is supposed to sell all that. And there is not a single frame in 2+ hours that does. Not one frame makes me go, I get why they are in their unrequited love, why they're in their forbidden love, whatever it is. Not one frame do I believe any of that. And that's why this movie fails in my perception.
Mm-hmm. I still think Phantom Menace Phantom Menace is the harder watch.
Yippee!
That one's more painful for me. I mean, the only real redeeming thing that's got at the end is Darth Maul and the fight between the two Jedi. I didn't really like the pod racer scene a whole lot. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, cool. The pod racer stuff was cool. Just the fact that it was Anakin, not so cool.
Yeah. I don't know. Just the goofy like Jabba the Hutt initiating the race and then all the CGI characters cheering. It just felt very, and Jar Jar, there was a lot more wrong with the first one. I understand what you're saying about the romance being the key part of the second one, mm-hmm. but I found the stuff about the clone army much more interesting. We got to see Obi-Wan on his own. That was cool. You got the whole fight at the end was bombastic. And I actually really liked the interaction between Obi-Wan and Anakin on that vehicle. I can't remember what they're called. Some kind of runner. When Padme falls off and they have this little battle where Anakin wants to save her and Obi-Wan convinces him, what would Padme do? And, oh, she would do her duty. And I liked that moment. That was one time where I actually kind of dug Anakin a little bit. But when he goes after his mom, I hate them. I killed him.
Yeah.
That is the moment where she should have said, no, you are a crazy SOB. We're done. We're not going to do it. But instead she's like, oh, tell me more. You know?
Yeah, but his mom just died. She can't walk. His mom just died. She can't walk away then. That's just bad form.
That's exactly when you leave. This dude is nuts. I am not going to marry you and have two babies with you. No.
The thing that I thought was funny about watching this again is, so did you guys ever see that Jar Jar is a Sith Lord YouTube video?
Oh yeah, yes.
So as I'm watching this one and I'm watching Jar Jar, after knowing that video exists, I started seeing exactly what they're talking about in every single scene where Jar Jar, it looks like Jar Jar has so much more going on behind the eyes and he's just like, all right, well, it's time for me to act like an idiot, you know.
I feel bad for Jar Jar. He's like the Kelly Conway of the Star Wars franchise. Poor thing. That poor guy. Misa so horny or whatever the hell he was saying half the time. It's just poor guy.
Misa so horny.
Close
Misa,
enough.
Misa love you long time?
Yeah, there you, exactly. All right, so what's the verdict? $10 full price of admission. What do you give Attack of the Clones?
$10 for the full price of admission. I give it $5.
All right.
I would probably score it 450, but because it's Star Wars, I'm giving it 5.
I give it 4, and I don't have any questions about it. It's 4. Dave McGraw, he was actually going to come by and do a Lego Batman review, but his schedule changed. He's in South Korea. I'm assuming he's worried about assassins right now. But he did write a review for the site, so definitely go check that out. And he did say that it was enjoyable. He enjoyed it. He had a good time, but it's too long. It's a few minutes too long, and it's way too stuffed with jokes. It actually has too many jokes, is what he said. Interesting. And I think he gave it $7 out of 10. He did enjoy it. He just not as much as Lego Movie. All right, Scott, what's coming out on Blu-ray and on demand?
First off, we got Hacksaw Ridge, which hits disc and video on demand on February 21st. World War II American Army medic Desmond T. Doss, played by Andrew Garfield, who served during the Battle of Okinawa, refuses to kill people and becomes the first man in American history to receive the Medal of Honor without firing a shot. Aaron reviewed that on episode 251, gave it $9. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a big war movie guy, but I think I got to check that one out. Another one I definitely need to see is Nocturnal Animals. A wealthy art gallery owner is haunted by her ex-husband's novel, a violent thriller she interprets as a symbolic revenge tale. This one stars Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal. Aaron also reviewed that one, gave it $6. And I'm just so curious about that one because Aaron says there's something in the first 5 minutes that's going to piss me off. And I'm curious to know what that is.
You sure?
I don't know about piss off, but it's definitely going to make you uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah?
No, it'll piss you off. I know Scott. It'll be like, man, are you kidding me right now? That's what Scott's reaction is going to be.
It has nothing to do with animals.
Nope. Nothing to do with animals. Nope.
All right. I have no idea, but I'm going to check that one out.
But when you do, you'll know.
All right. I'll text you as soon as it happens.
You do that.
Manchester by the Sea. An uncle is asked to take care of his teenage nephew after the boy's father dies. I could not find a review score for this one. Did any of us see it?
None of us have seen it. I haven't seen it anyway. No.
No,
it didn't get a wide theater release, so I don't think any of us got to go see it.
Yes, it did.
Maybe the premise is boring. Maybe that. I don't know.
Yeah, that might be.
What we did see, unfortunately, was Bad Santa 2.
Oh.
Fueled by cheap whiskey, greed, and hatred, Willie teams up once again with his angry little sidekick, Marcus, to knock off a Chicago charity on Christmas Eve. Billy Bob Thornton and Tony Cox return, and newcomers Kathy Bates and Christina Hendricks join the cast. Aaron and I reviewed this one back on episode 253, if you want to check out that review. Aaron gave it $3.50, and I gave it $4. So steer clear of that one.
Yep.
It's not great.
It's not good. Great.
Some laugh-out-loud moments, but not worth the 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So those were disc releases on video demand. We've got on February 17th a movie called XX, an all-female horror anthology featuring new work from Karen Kusama, Annie Clark, Roxanne Benjamin, and Jovanka Vukovic. And that's all it says about the synopsis. So it's a
horror movie.
It says anthology. Yeah. I think like VHS type thing where there's little vignettes or something in it.
I believe so. Yeah.
And then Decanted, which hits on February 21st. This is a look inside one of the most intimate wine growing regions in the world, Napa Valley, as we follow the journey of new beginnings and mastering a craft. As boring as that sounds, I watched a documentary on craft beer, so I can't really knock it.
Hmm. Yep. There you go.
And that's it.
All right, Johnny, we're on to our game this week.
All right, so first up, according to voting and the messages we got last week, Aaron won the movie innuendo game. I almost said it wrong again. With innuendo? Innuendo? Yeah, I almost said it like that again. With his blasting quote.
Yeah, blasting. That's funny.
Yeah. Which, round of applause for Aaron for getting it. However, Aaron provided me with that fact, so suspect.
Yeah, maybe? It's true. Go look at the feed, man. There was a vote. There's a live vote there and then emails. I'll send them all to you if you want it. I'll do it.
You know what? I don't think it's going to be in the theater around me, so I don't really need to go to see all that.
Okay.
So, see what you today did. We're
must not be getting a wide release, huh?
Yeah, didn't get a wide release. All right, we're going to tonight we're going to play Say It Like It Is. Each of us is going to take a favorite or famous memorable line or monologue from a movie. And we're going to deliver it how people would actually say it. We're going to do it like this. Scott's going to go, then Aaron's going to go, and then I'm going to go. Ready?
Ready.
I'm ready. So just to be clear, we're taking a famous line, and we're going to say it as if people said it in real life or by today's standards, not like how it actually was in the movie.
Correct.
Yes?
Correct. You give I give the original quote, what the movie was from, whichever order you want, and then how people would really say it.
All right. So my quote comes from The Karate Kid, the infamous line, wax on, wax off. We all remember that scene, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, today, here's how that line would go. Instead, it would say, wax on, take your mandatory union sanctioned break, wax off.
Well played. Well played. All right. Mine is from the 1942 classic Casablanca. Humphrey Bogart's Rick, after he sees Ilsa, says, of all the gin joints and all the towns and all the world, she walks into mine. You know, that one.
It's a spot on impression.
What he'd really say is, are you kidding me? I'm in the middle of nowhere, avoiding Nazis left and right. And an amazing Amy here, she somehow stumbles into my club. Captain, I'm going to need a restraining order, see? I went James Cagney. I've got a stage 5 Klingon with a serious case of the Ricks.
I'm not even going to freaking bother, man. That's just, damn it.
Go, Johnny. Go, John, right. Go. Go.
Okay. So, the original line. Say hello to my little friend.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Montana, Scarface, right?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. I'm going to shoot you with my big ass gun.
I like it.
I like yeah, that could work.
All right. Well, listeners, you go on our Facebook group and you can, and we have the post for the episode. Be sure to comment there. Whoever you think won, whether it was me, Scott, or John, or me. And if you email us who you thought, you can do that too. feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or you can throw it on Twitter @buypopcorn. Either one. All right, guys, any recent film or TV recommendations not previously discussed? And I want to say that was a fun game. We got to do that one again.
Yeah, I like it.
I just watched Justice League Dark, the cartoon that came out a couple weeks ago on video on demand. I think it's coming out soon for purchase. And they did a really good job with this cartoon. I love it a lot. It fits in the same storyline that the current iteration of DCU cartoons are going. And if you are looking for something that will infuriate you to what DCU movies are doing, this is a perfect choice. Go for it.
Okay.
All right, I gave John Wick a second chance, the original, because the second one was coming out, and I watched it the first time, didn't dig it too much, and decided to sit down and watch it this weekend, and wow, that movie's a lot of fun. I don't know what was wrong with me the first time I watched it, but I enjoyed it thoroughly this time, and I need to go see the second one now. So,
Were you on your cycle? It was your cycle, wasn't it?
Probably.
All right, just
now,
check.
Was there something different that you noticed, or is it just you were in a different frame of mind? Do you remember?
I think I was in a different frame of mind. It was one of those I was watching, you know, out of the corner of my eye while I was, you know, probably working on prepping a show or something. I don't know. I was distracted and wasn't really into it. I actually sat down and watched it this time, and man, the action sequences are cool, and Keanu Reeves is. He really sells that character. I just really liked him throughout the whole thing. And mm-hmm. I just love how everybody is just okay with everything he does.
Well, I don't know about okay. They're terrified of him.
I don't mean the villains. I just mean like a cop shows up and sees a dead body in his hallway and is just like, well, have a good night, man.
Yep. You working again?
Thanks, Tony. or I don't even remember who it was, but some guy that just came, you doing all right, man? You taking care of things? Or some older guy that you have no idea who he is or how he knows him. Mm-hmm. It's just like, good to see you, man. Just like the casual conversations that are happening in the midst of all this chaos and violence was awesome.
My favorite, the bouncer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the bouncer. My favorite part is when somebody mentions his name and then just like, oh.
Oh.
Oh. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did you strike my son? Because he killed John Wick's dog and stole his car. Oh. Thanks for that. And then just hangs up. And that's it.
So. Yeah.
Love it. Yep. I saw Legion. So I did see Legion, which.
It's a TV show, right?
It's a Marvel TV show. It's on FX. It stars Dan Stevens as Marvel's David Haller. I'm not going to tell you his lineage because I don't want to spoil that. But he's a man who was diagnosed as a schizophrenic as a boy. He spends a lot of time in a mental hospital. Before this new patient comes in, he gets a little smitten with her, named Sid, and leads him to realize that he's, in fact, one of the most powerful mutants in history. I really dug the pilot, man. It's completely surreal. It's completely different. It's almost dreamlike in a lot of spaces because you don't know if he's hallucinating, if he's actually in a psychosis, what is going on with this guy. And we don't really have it pieced together until the end. It's one of those where you have to watch it to the end to see where it's all going. Because we really struggle with knowing if he's in reality or hallucination. I don't know if that's going to continue. I don't know if that's just the structure they use to introduce the character so you understand his plight. But that's what this whole first pilot, it's like a 90-minute pilot. And by the end of it, I kind of saw where he was going. I'm curious where they're going to go from here. But Dan Stevens is great, man. He's great as always. He bops around in varying degrees of psychosis. You've got Aubrey Plaza and Katie Asselton pops in. I know Scott loves her from the League.
Mm-hmm.
Several recognizable actors are here, and it's interesting enough. I would recommend it if you're worried that, oh, great, another comic book show. It is not a comic book show. it was presented completely uniquely. It's a very unique series. So I would say check it out. Don't let the Marvel name fool you. I mean, yes, there's some X-Men connections, but it really plays like a straightforward drama. And it really works to its advantage. I really liked it.
Very cool.
Let's go to emails. I don't think there's any outrage to talk about.
I got one.
Oh, never mind. Scott's mad about something. Get ready, John.
I'm bracing myself.
Just take your time
because I have to pull something up. So just take your time.
So Sunday has become my day to sit on the couch and watch movies with my wife and try to get caught up on any series or older movies or newer movies that I haven't got a chance to see in the theater. And I was watching a movie and I get a text from Aaron that says, "Hey Scott, who's on the Grammys? Who's this duet singing?" And I wasn't watching, so I flipped it over to see who it was, and I only caught literally the last 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Well, hey, while it's here, let's just kind of see what's going on with the Grammys." And so Beyonce comes up.
Oh no, you're not going after the Queen.
Yes, I am.
Oh boy,
because.
Can we put a disclaimer on this first? People in the world, Scott, Aaron and I don't have anything to do with what Scott's about to say.
I don't know. I might be on his side. So we'll see where he goes. Right.
I'm just trying to avoid whatever is coming up.
Go for it, Scott.
We all know that Beyonce is pregnant with twins right now. And that didn't stop her from performing. And while on one hand, I understand that you're not going to do what you normally do if you're carrying twins. You're not going to dance around like normal. So she decided to do, would you call it a song?
No, it's performance art.
I felt like she didn't even say or sing anything for about 3 or 4 minutes. And it was like an interpretive dance. And it was her, you know, wearing things that focused on the fact that she was pregnant. And I just took to Twitter and Facebook to see what everyone was saying about it. And Aaron, you're the only one that said that had anything to say like what I did. Everyone was just, oh, it was beautiful. It was so brave of her and all this.
Man, I went for the remote like a ninja at it with a Red Bull. I was just like, no, I'm done.
I feel like if anybody else besides Beyonce had tried to do that, people would be crapping all over it.
Yeah, I agree.
But because it's Beyonce, it's art and it's beautiful and it's awesome. I seriously couldn't make it through the whole performance. She finally started singing or speaking or whatever, and it wasn't entertaining. It was boring. It wasn't clear on what it was trying to say. And it just drives me crazy that people are just like loving that so much, because I'm like, what are you seeing? Show me some actual music or show me some actual stage presence. And again, I understand she's not going to do that in being pregnant, but
I liked her visual storytelling, I mean, however you want to word it, for Lemonade, because she made that entire thing to speak to women of color, and I appreciate that. I thought it was really well done. Mm-hmm. It's this performance, though, was not good. I just didn't find it good. And I love that Entertainment Weekly, this is a true story, Entertainment Weekly put up a post, and this is like a written article about how great this performance was while it was still going on. Now, you tell me that they did not have an advance notice that, hey, Beyonce is going to be doing this performance. It's going to be great. Be sure to put that up there. It was up with comments already flowing down before she even finished. And it was like 3 or 4 paragraphs long. So, I mean, come on. That's so orchestrated. And I get it. It's a business. I get it. But it's okay to say something she did is not working for me, and that did not work for me. I wanted that TV change so fast. It made me start watching The Walking Dead. Like the premiere, the mid-season premiere came on, I wasn't even going to watch it. That came on, I'm like, well, I guess I'm watching The Walking Dead tonight.
Yeah, seriously, I was ready to sit down and continue watching the Grammys after that, and I just couldn't sit through it. I just went back to My Blue Heaven or whatever I was watching. And
probably a better choice.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Adele, I thought she was wonderful. If you saw her performance, I thought that was just fantastic. And she even had like issues and she still came back and just owned it. It was entertaining. I didn't find what Beyonce was doing, and it was like a nod to motherhood. I get what she was going for. It just did not work at all for me.
It felt more awkward than insightful.
Yep, absolutely. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. All right, let's go to email before you get kicked off this podcast, Scott. Because you cannot poop on the Queen. It's just not done here. Bay will not have it. Bay will not have it. Johnny?
All right. So up first, I got Peter Dennis. Great job on the guest spot. I love Dirk Gently as well. We need regular spot for women on the podcast because it adds so much to the podcast.
And he's referencing our romantic couple episode with Angela.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
With Angela. DJ Wallach, as I like to call her. DJ Wallach.
Right.
DJ Wallach.
I think we've had women on a couple times. I mean, you know, when we give them a guest pass and, you know, allow them in, then they can come in and play. Sure. I mean, we've got Scott every week. I don't really know what the argument is.
So. Right.
Yeah.
We also get accused of being nicer than women.
Yeah, we're too nice. Give me a break.
We're not the same when women are around. Well, no, we have to put our pants on.
Only if you want to avoid, you know, lawsuits. All right, what else we got? We do try to do that, though. And we're actually, I think Amanda is coming on for the Oscars when we do that episode. So there you go. Because she begged and pleaded and paid money and everything else. So, yeah.
Michael Bonovich, so only a matter of time before Marvel movies hit space more than Earth. In the comics, X-Men and especially Fantastic Four spend a good amount of time in space, kind of the cost of having never-ending stories. Hashtag Fast and Furious in space.
Yes, make it happen.
That's kind of happens.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about it for years now. So when is it going to happen? Like, seriously, ride a space shuttle, man. Let's do it.
If you can get chased by a submarine, you can get chased by a space frigate or something. Come on, make it happen.
And while they're up in space, they got to bump into George Clooney because his body's still floating out there from gravity.
Oh, jeez. Hey, if you could put Harry Stamper out there, Harry Stamper and a bunch of drillers up there on a rock, you can put these meatheads and gearheads out there. You can do that.
Just connect.
You know,
them all.
I want to see that happen more in movies, where just random characters from other universes just pop up randomly. Like,
that would be awesome.
What was that? What was that Western movie with the guy from Family Guy?
You want to narrow
Thousand
that
Ways to Die in the West?
Oh yeah, Million Ways to Die in the West. Yeah.
Million Ways to Die in the West, and they just had random character from. I don't know if is that
Django.
Is a spoiler.
Django came in. Yeah.
Django came in. Doc Brown from Back to the Future shows up, which is just awesome. I just little random cameos like that from movies that don't make sense to fit in there would just be very cool. I think that'd be awesome.
That would be cool.
All right, we got one from Anna Maria Germa. She says, sorry Scott, Harry and Sally was the correct answer. Well, that's like your opinion, man.
Nicely done.
Well done, dude. Well done.
And Manuel Perez says, great podcast. All have to agree with Aaron and Angela. About a Boy is a great film. One of Hugh Grant's best. Apparently, I need to give that one a second shot, too, because I wasn't a fan. But it's been a long time. Manuel also says, let's hear more from MC Wallach. That rap was great, Angela. That's pretty good.
She was kind of a hit there.
Yes, she was.
I want to say Justina Shave. I hope I said that right. I'm sure I didn't. But thanks for she's done a couple collages for the show, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Noah
and Allie were on there twice, just saying.
Yeah, no Harry and Tasker, right? No Harry and Helen?
Yeah.
You guys are trying to say something. I don't know what it is. Mm-mm. What is it? I mean, what's happening here?
Some things don't need to be said. It's a visual medium.
I don't get it. What's happening?
I will say that PS Gamer on Twitter, I forgot to put this one on here, said Scott, Notebook did not portray an actual relationship. Ooh, fighting words.
Ooh.
What do you think of that?
That's a statement with no supporting details. I would like to hear the rest of that argument.
Well, it's Twitter. How much detail? You don't.
140 characters.
Throw a GIF on there or something.
Yeah, all right.
Email feedback at the Hollywood Outsider. Tell Scott your argument. I think he wants to hear it.
I would like to hear it.
All right. And in regards to our 50 Shades spoiler cast, we've got three semi varying degrees of complimentary comments. Jessica.
Different shades of gray, you're saying?
Yes. Different shades of gray. Jessica says, kudos, Scott, for knowing what they're there for. No kudos for, you know, when he's talking about Benoit balls. No kudos for Barney Stinson, a.k.a. Aaron, for being a proponent of negging. I had to look up negging. I didn't know what that was. Did you guys know what negging was?
Yes.
Seriously. What is negging? Define it right now. Define it.
I also know what order of operations is.
Piss off.
Well, negging was the thing that Scott and I let you twist in the wind for, so.
Explain it so people know what negging is, because explain it. I can't explain it correctly, I'm sure.
Negging is where you give a comment that is meant to, which is normally meant to elicit a negative response, but the actual intention is to get the other person to take notice of you and actually look at you in a positive light.
And she's mad at me because it works. I don't create this working ability. It just happens. It's magic. I didn't make it happen. Don't be
mad. Says the guy
me.
Who has a long laundry list of people who will slash his tires.
Yeah.
It's not long. Just saying. It's not long. It's like 4 pages. That's not that long.
That's normal.
She goes on after she schools me on what that means, because I really thought it was like a racial slur. I'm like, hey, I don't appreciate that. But you guys missed out on the best part of the movie. The big poster of Chronicles of Riddick hanging in Christian's teenage bedroom, getting spanked in front of Riddick. I'd prefer Riddick over Christian. Man, we made fun of that in the movie. I wish we would have brought that up.
Yeah, we totally forgot because we both saw it and turned to each other in the theater and went, hey, look, it's Riddick.
She's
right,
because
that's why
Riddick.
You turned to each other.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's the argument.
Hey, what's up?
Ty Nelson said, listening to this led to an epiphany. Christian Grey likes to dish out pain. He has expert detective skills, which allows him to stalk women and hack their bank accounts. He has a secret, well, he says liar, but I think he meant lair, with all of his toys. Plus, he's mega rich. Yep, Christian Grey is what would have happened to Bruce Wayne if he never got into crime fighting.
That's a really good point. It's a really good point.
What are you waiting for? Smack me. And lastly, this is a really nice one, actually. Very, very sweet. I really appreciate it. Jody Lynn said, I really want to thank you guys for your review of 50 Shades Darker. Well, we're glad we gave it to you, Jody. I know you may not have liked it. Sorry, let me continue. I know you may not have liked it, but I didn't feel bullied or trashed as a film as a fan like I did from many other movie review podcasts for being a fan. Everyone has their favorite fandom, Star Wars, Marvel, DC. There are a lot of 50 Shades. There's even a podcast on Mixlr where a bunch of us got together. What's that?
A lot of fans of 50 Shades.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's a lot of fans of 50 Shades. There's even a podcast where a bunch of us got together each week to talk about the books, movie, actors, and fandom. We respect other people's fandom and just wish people respected ours. So I want to thank you for not making us feel small.
Aw, that's very nice.
That is very nice.
It's kind of what we're going for. We went into it with an open mind, I think.
I don't know, John.
We were the three guys willing to go see a movie not designed for us and one of us by ourselves. So, I mean, there's a lot of effort.
Oh, dude, if you lived in town, we had to all go see that together.
We would have held hands.
Hang on. My question really sincerely is, who do you think had a more awkward time, the guy going alone or the two guys in a theater full of couples?
The guy going alone. Trust me.
I don't know,
man.
It was pretty debatable.
We got some funny looks.
Hey, you two had each other.
Yeah.
I just had me and Rosie. That's it.
You had a field full of women that were panting. So, really?
I should have started negging. Right there. I would have.
You're ugly? You're ugly? You're ugly? You're ugly? Yeah, you should have done that. See where that takes you. Thank you very much, Jody. We really appreciate it. The one thing we can't stand is people shitting all over fans. Everybody's a fan of something, and just because we don't like it doesn't mean it's awful, even when it's awful.
Yep. Likes. Unless it's video games, then it's okay to shit on people for liking it.
I agree with that. Yeah, there's no good games or bad games. What is it? I don't even know what it is, but whatever. Leave us a review on iTunes if you would. That would be great. You can join our Facebook group or also on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Stay through the credits for our talk on John Wick 2, which John and I are going to participate in. Scott didn't go because he was too busy living his life. Find another episode.
Or watching the first one.
Yeah, we're watching the first one. You can find other episodes, reviews, and other info at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Our email, again, is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Thank you guys for being here, Johnny and Scotty.
Absolutely, man.
Don't have anywhere else to be.
You don't have to go, but you can't stay here.
Anything else you want to talk about, Scott? You want to mention some podcast you do?
Some podcast. What is it? Oh, yeah. The Gaming Outsider podcast. If you like video games, be sure to check out our podcast, which can be found at thegamingoutsider.com. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the other podcast catcher apps. It's a good time. We got a good group over there and a great community. So be sure to check that out.
And if you want to follow me and some of my artwork and other activities that I do, you can find me on Instagram at rjohn.draws on Instagram.com, as well as my Facebook page, which is rjohn, facebook.com/rjohndraws. Let's cuddle.
You can also find me on The Blacklist Exposed if you like the show The Blacklist. And Remake This Movie Right. Except the most recent episode, Flight of the Navigator, which I wasn't a part of, and Scott was, and I hear it was great.
It was a lot of fun. We actually got some good comments on the story that we came up with, and I think we did it justice. And I'm still waiting for you to actually watch that movie, man.
You know, I keep meaning to. I do. I was waiting for you to watch John Wick, and then I would get to it.
Well,
so.
Done and done.
That was.
Did I just hear that Aaron didn't see has never seen Flight of the Navigator?
That's not. Correct, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, this is bullshit. I'm out of here.
I have not. Aren't you the guy that hasn't seen like every Christmas movie? What are you talking about?
That's Christmas movie. Christmas sucks. Flight of the Navigator is amazing.
Oh my god.
It John, built I like childhoods.
I like that movie so much that when I watched it for reviewing that, I watched it and then the next night I watched it again. I just love that movie so much.
I honestly can't blame you. I used to love that movie like it was going out of style. I broke the tape watching it so much.
Oh yeah. It was one of those that I rented so many times that I might as well have bought it because we just rented it on VHS. On VHS.
I'm VHS kids. Well, cool. I will watch it soon. But we got to watch, like, I think So I Married a Millionaire or So I Want to. So, what is
How
it?
To Marry a Millionaire.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
Yeah, there we go. We're going to watch Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I hope Dog Regis shows up. That would be great.
All Rooster's right. Millions?
Guys, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember, well, except for the John Wick stuff. So remember, the next time you head to the theater, buy popcorn. All right, Scotty, get out.
You are a dirty hooker pirate. I'm on a Prince kick right now, so.
Purple. What is Purple Rain? Someone tell me. It's been bugging me for decades. Like, if you really listen to the lyrics, it doesn't make much sense. Unless the rain is, like, his body oils. dripping down on you.
Maybe he's just really, really interested in doing stuff in a black light, so it all looks purple when it comes out.
Ooh, I could work with that.
I mean, that's who I think we have to blame for this whole, like, we're gonna do it under a black light.
You blame Prince for black lights?
I blame Prince for black lights. That way the girl can see all the stains from the girls before her. That's always a bad idea.
All right, Johnny. This is the warning. This is the warning for the audience. We're going to talk spoilery about John Wick 2. We're not going to talk about it forever. We've already talked about the movie quite a bit. But there's like three main points we wanted to talk about. First up,
most important main point is Ruby Rose getting slammed against a wall over and over and over again. That was awesome.
That was so good. That fight wasn't even a fight.
No, it wasn't.
Not even a fight.
Let me put my hand out so you can stab me in the hand, because that's a good idea.
God. And did she actually died, right? Like, there's no coming back from that.
I hope so. It seemed like when he was walking away, she was like, I'll be seeing you. And he did that whole, yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I hope they don't bring her back, because that's, I mean, what, why was she in? They could have put, if they wanted a female badass to be in that role, why couldn't they hire Olivia Munn?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Olivia Munn, you could have put, Peggy Carter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. What? Yeah, man, there's so many actresses you could have put. So many Kate actresses.
Lotz. Katie Lotz could have done that role amazingly.
Zoe Saldana. I mean, there's a lot of talent out there, and Ruby Rose, just stop trying to make her happen. I don't know, but enough with that.
Tell her.
The Matrix cameo. The Lawrence Fishburne. There's a lot of hype about Keanu and Lawrence Fishburne reuniting. What did you think about them and him being the Pigeon Man?
I liked seeing them together again. I liked how Lawrence Fishburne was bringing some of that bravado that he can have at times, because in a lot of the stuff that I've seen of him recently, he gets really quiet. He gets very controlled. But this time he is just chewing on the scenery. I think he actually eats a pigeon at some point. He was great. It was great to see him having so much fun. It was kind of like, if I were to equate this to anything, it'd be like seeing, what's your boyfriend's name?
Kurt Russell.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. Seeing him in Fast and the Furious, just that look where he's practically winking at the camera the entire time he's on scene. Mm-hmm. That's what I would equate this Florence Fishburne appearance as. What about you?
It was really short.
Yeah.
I really liked it because he kind of is going against him. It's not like they're going to be instant buddies. They have a mutual need for each other. It turns out I'm still kind of surprised that he would actually help him when there was $7 million he could have got to take Wick out.
Mm-hmm.
but I'm sure that'll be played out in the future. It felt really like they were setting it up for the next movie, is what it felt like to me.
Well, there's a lot of setting up for the next movie happening. You, in the very first sequence, when you're dealing with him recovering the car, the boxes that those gold coins show up are in the warehouse. They're transporting those gold coins back mm-hmm. and forth in that warehouse with the Russians. Then you see it again when Winston's dealing with the dealer who makes those things, and it keeps on coming up. So that whole thing and the mention of the table and all that other stuff, there's a much richer background to this. And I like how in this movie we're just seeing like quick flashes of it. In the first movie we didn't see much of it, and this one you're seeing quick flashes of a much richer background that I think is going to really play out in the next movie. Say it, stupid.
No, I like that, man. I was not expecting a world building exercise. I really wasn't.
I wasn't at all either. It was nice how they did it. And these are two stunt coordinators.
Who?
The director and the writer, or I believe the director and the writer or the creators are stunt coordinators, if I remember correctly.
I'm going to have to take your word on that one. I don't know for sure. I know, was it Derek Kolstad, I think, wrote it, and Chad Stahelski directed it. I really like that they built an entire world. I mean, I didn't expect that. I mean, they had kind of the overtones in it, or the undertones, however you want to say it, in the original movie. Mm-hmm. And then you get to this one, and now you have in a very expanding world. I mean, he goes to Rome. There's a whole lot of it's a world organization. This isn't some small thing. And there are very specific rules. If you break the rules, you pay a price. And John Wick keeps wanting to bend the rules, can't do it, and adheres to him until the very end when he takes that last shot. Now, I guess my question to you is, could he just drag him out of that building and shoot him? Or is that against the rule?
I think that in the spirit of the rule, that's just as bad as shooting him right there. It has to be. If you think about it, the whole idea is that you're supposed to be, these places are sanctuary for people like them. Mm-hmm. And if you assault one another in the building, whatever the outcome, it's just as bad as if you killed them anyways. If you remember the first one, Padalecki's character, Palicki's.
Yeah.
Adrian, her character Palicki's. Tried to kill John Wick, couldn't kill John Wick. And then she ended up killing somebody that was holding her hostage. But she got killed at the end of that movie for breaking the rules. So I think the only reason why we have the ending we have is because he is held in such reverence as a person. So, but I do think if he would have dragged him out, he would have been in just as much trouble.
I was kind of like, that's all I kept thinking. It was like, just carry him out. But at that point he was so tired, frustrated. And he just wanted it to end. Like he was done. Just done. Mm-hmm. I love that moment because I didn't think he was going to do it.
No, I didn't think so either. But really, his life is over if he doesn't do it anyways. Mm-hmm. He has to do something. But just put it all up in flames. Just do what freaking Ben Affleck does to his life. Just go out.
Wow. Wow. So what do you think about the ending? I mean, at the end of the movie, we've got John Wick on a run for his life. And the whole world's coming down against him. That scene at the very end when he goes to meet, is it Winston?
Winston.
Yeah, Ian McShane. And he goes mm-hmm. to meet him in that giant courtyard, and everybody stops just so he can illustrate the power that's at play here. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think John Wick looked legitimately surprised at that moment. Like, oh, I didn't even realize that this was that involved or something to that degree, that this meeting was that involved. And then he realizes he's got a chance to get out, but the whole world is going to come after him. It's basically a cliffhanger ending. Did you like that? I mean, what if this movie would have flopped, which it didn't, but what if it would have?
I don't want to think about the what ifs about it. That's just a habit that I'm in as a person. But that ending, even if the movie flopped, actually, you know what? Here's the what if of it. Even if the movie flopped and that was the ending I was left with as much as I love that movie, I would have been okay, because at least it'd be kind of like Shane running off into the sunset or riding off into the sunset. You don't know if he lives or he dies. And it would be that sort of ending to this story. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being able to stop and say, okay, well, I love the series. Now I'm going to, when I think about it, I'm going to think about the what ifs of what went on further from this point, because there was just so many different directions. What if he survives? What if he doesn't survive? What if he starts developing his own team or his own,
he has like a little squad, his own squad of assassins.
Yeah, what if he picks up like Common, like I was pointing out in the show, Common and him had a great chemistry, I think. Mm-hmm. And the whole watching the two of them work together would be a lot of fun. And watching him bring more people up and having his own table to work with, that could be. And then it's him and his table versus Ian McShane and that table. That kind of is beautiful to me.
Yeah, and I think Common will definitely be back. I mean, they definitely alluded that he's going to be alive. The whole, you know, as long as you don't take this out to try to kill me, you'll live. You know, that's basically what he did. I really want him to come back.
That's what he did to Lawrence Fishburne, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. Did the same thing.
And you saw he ended up working with Lawrence Fishburne at that time. So it was Lawrence Fishburne had that thinking. So if you want to think of as far as symmetry goes in the future, if you go with the same sort of symmetry in the tale, that is a very big possibility for Common to have the same kind of outlook Lawrence Fishburne did.
Do you think he should have shot the woman in Rome instead of her bleeding out? I thought that was kind of a cop-out to a degree.
I understood why he let it happen, because he didn't want to be there to begin with. He didn't want anything to do with it to begin with. And he knew he was going to get set up anyways. Letting her take her own life was, he had a respect for her. So why not? Why not let her decide?
I mean, as the movie goes, because the thing that always bothers me in movies like this is they're always afraid to have the guy kill a woman because they're afraid that you're going to lose your sympathy for him. And that's, to me, what this was. This was just, look, we can't actually have him kill a woman because then people aren't going to be loving this character, even though he kills one at the end of the movie. But she's a badass assassin. So I don't know. I mean, I just felt like that I was kind of on. I mean, it still worked. I thought it played beautifully. I love the imagery when she's laying in the pool or in the hot tub. Mm-hmm. But I did feel like it was kind of a wuss out. For a badass assassin, why would that be a problem? Unless you have a code, I guess.
You know what? That's it. I think it's the code, and that's why I forgave it for what you're saying. I totally understand the point you're getting at with it. She is, though, a head of a crime family, so she's not a good person to begin with. So I don't. It's the same thing as if she killed when he killed Ruby Rose's character. It doesn't mean that. You know what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah, I get what you're trying to say. I do. So where do you think, where do you want to see in the next movie? Where do you want it to go?
I want to see John Wick develop his own, turn into exactly what he doesn't want to be, which is the head of his own table, the head of his own group of assassins, and having his own sort of world to defend himself from this other world. That's what I want to see. I want to see him become the exactly what he never wanted to be.
I mean, it seems to me like he's going to go after the organization because he just wants quiet. And that's the only way he can do it now is he has to take them out. But there's kind of a flip side to that is that it's really his fault he's in that position. You know, they didn't put him in there. So, I mean, he's going to be pissed at this organization, but they didn't really do it to him. He did it to himself, you know?
Agreed. Yeah, for sure.
So I'm kind of curious how they're going to do that or where – even how I want them to do that. But what I was thinking was, I think it would be very cool as if at the very end of John Wick 3, he gets basically Common catches up to him and does the same thing to him. Only John Wick pulls it out to kill him. And then we fade to black.
That would be a beautiful ending for damn it. I almost did it again. See, now I'm going to do it every other time.
For sure. What?
For sure. For sure.
For sure. For sure. That's kind of where I think the next movie will be a bloodbath, but it did huge business, so there's definitely going to be a sequel. Thank God. I want more Wick, man. I really do.
I want to see more Wick as well. I hope it's not just three movies, but I'll take three movies. Or even it'd be even cool if it did get passed to a different character after Keanu's done. So if they built up a world strong enough where, okay, it's the John Wick story. Now we're going to have the Cassian story and so on and so forth.
Did you like the moment where the house blew up and the dog lived? Everybody was like, oh, not the dog again.
I was holding my breath, but I'm like, there's no way they're going to kill two dogs. There's no way.
That would be awful.
That would be terrible.
I feel bad for the dog, though, because he's still following him around. And I mean, that poor dog has no idea how many bullets are going to be coming his way.
That dog's amazing. I love that dog. Yeah. He didn't do much, but he was good enough for me.
He was. Any standout moments that you want to mention, like things where you were just in awe?
There was, as far as like the thing that stuck in my mind the most was the mirror place.
Yeah.
It walked a very fine line for me, because that was the one moment in the movie where I thought, okay, this is where they're trying to do something different from the first movie, and they want to do something that stands out. However, going back to my point, as far as they were very careful to not step over the line. Sure, they got right to it, but they didn't step over it to make it too crazy of a moment. But that whole mirror room fighting thing was kind of incredible. Using the mirrors the way they did, it was just the angles they were able to create out of that. And just the simple fact that there's so many times that you should be going, I should be seeing a camera right now. Why can't I see the camera?
Yeah, exactly.
They did a beautiful job at that.
Beautiful job. My favorite moment is the very last shot. I love that whole thing where he's sitting there talking to Winston and then everybody stops just to illustrate that point. I thought that was just a beautiful moment. But anytime he's in a fight of any kind is also just amazing.
Yeah.
And once the action starts, man, it just does not stop.
No, you do get these moments that it slows down a bit, but I think they're doing that for our benefit, because there's only so much the human body can take as far as holding your breath. Well, the amount of dedication that Keanu had to learn how to do all that is just it's superhuman. It really is superhuman.
Do you have any complaints or anything you want to mention, like things you didn't like or not really?
I think I already mentioned her name.
Oh, okay. We got that. Yep. We definitely got the rose.
Mm-hmm.
The bloom is off. I had to do it. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
All right. Well, we'll probably see her in John Wick 3, and hopefully she'll get shot a lot. Oh, the headshot, the double tap. Oh my God, how do I not mention the double tap? That is fantastic, because in every action movie we watch, whenever they shoot a guy and the guy always comes back later, you're always like, why didn't he shoot him in the head? He shoots everybody in the head. That's like his move. Double tap.
Yeah. It's always chest head.
Yep. Oh, it's beautifully done, man. Beautifully. Oh, the whole thing where he doesn't have a gun, so he's taking everybody else's gun. It's almost like I'm playing Call of Duty myself, and I've got no ammo clips, man. I felt every ounce of that. It was fantastic.
$7 million, 7 bullets.
So good. It was all I needed. That's it. All right. Well, remember, the next time you go to the theater to see John Wick Chapter 2, buy popcorn.